Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go. It's hour two. It is a Monday. We are live in Los Angeles, and this is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're on Fox Sports Radio and right here on FS1. 15 minutes from now, Trent Dilfer stops by. Daryl Moose Johnson of the Cowboys, Fox Sports, before the hour is done. He'll talk about Dallas's issue right now. They're doing some things well. It's all on offense. But defensively, their high-paid players are not productive at all. Jalen Smith hasn't done anything since he got that contract. He's athletic, but just not good at all. By the way, Heat Lakers, when's game four?
Wednesday,
tomorrow.
I believe.
Is it tomorrow or Wednesday?
It should be tomorrow, actually. Yeah, tomorrow.
All right, so I get two NFL games tonight, and then I get NBA Finals tomorrow.
Tomorrow, 9 p.m. Eastern.
Also, Tuesday, Thursday, we get baseball playoffs on FS1, so it's a very exciting time. That's Joy Taylor. All right, here we go. It's Colin right, Colin wrong. I'm a lot, I'm all over the map. Sometimes right, sometimes wrong. Let's call me out. It's a Monday. Here we go.
Where Colin was right?
Well, when people criticize Brady and say, his arm, I don't know about his arm. I keep saying his arm is fine. Brady was one quarterback the first 15 years of his career, and he's done another quarterback the last 4 to 5. The arm's not the issue. Second half yesterday, perfect passer rating. 260, 15 to 17, throwing deep balls. About 4 to 5 years ago, Tom didn't quite have the zip on the out routes, the sideline routes. He threw another pick six. But I've seen this Tom Brady for about 3 to 4 years, and this is what he is. He's not as good in December. He can't quite have the zip on the balls up the sideline. But this idea that his arm is the issue. No, his arm, he's an old quarterback, so what happens is energy, sustainability, consistency are not as good, but I don't buy the arm issue. Second half yesterday, he was brilliant, and a lot of deep balls.
Where Colin was wrong.
Bad Blazing 5 weekend. I took 3 favorites. I won one, I lost one, and I tied one, but I took 2 underdogs, and they both went down the tubes, Miami and Chicago. So I'm 1 game under 500 on the year. All of our odds provided by Foxbet. 1-3-1 on Friday.
Where Colin was right.
We predicted Joe Burrow would win his first game, week 4, at home against Jacksonville. Yes, we predicted it on June 3rd. I looked it up this morning, and we were right. Yesterday, Joe Burrow, who's a really nice prospect, he finally got help, as Joy noted. He got a running game. Joe Mixon's an excellent player, by the way. He had a little off-the-field stuff, but Joe Mixon's always been a nice player. I also like Cincinnati's wide receiver talent. Give the organization credit. They've got to redo the offensive line fast. Like this offseason, they got to upgrade the offensive line. But we told you this would be the game he would win. I think we predicted they'd win 2 or 3 games. I do think their next win will be November 29th against the New York Giants because their schedule for the next month is really, really tough. And he's going to pull back a little, Joe Burrow, in the next 4 games.
Where Colin was wrong.
I called the Mike McCarthy hire a B+ move. Nope, it's not. It's not working. Mike Nolan was a favor. Mike McCarthy, as I said earlier, Nolan hired McCarthy years ago. This was a favor. Nolan is outdated. They're not making any changes. It's not working. By the way, they keep falling into holes offensively. Why is Dak struggling in the first quarter? And then defensively, their best, highest-priced players, and I know it's a new scheme, but none of them are productive. DeMarcus Lawrence and Jalen Smith, for the money you're paying them, are simply not productive. So I don't know how the way out of this, because it's not like their schedule lightens up a ton. It's not a good hire right now. It's not a B+ hire. It is a D+ hire.
Where Colin was right.
I like Justin Herbert out of college. I said January 30th on the air. I said he's the Senior Bowl MVP, the Rose Bowl MVP. He's got the liveliest arm of all these first-round draft pick quarterbacks. He's big, he's mobile, and a 4-point student. And Oregon had marginal tight end receiving talent. Don't outthink the room. He's going to be a really good quarterback. I don't know when, but he will be. It's now. He's a really good quarterback. In the Rose Bowl, Oregon had a very conservative offensive sensibility this year. They have an offensive line coach as a head coach, and they kind of want to pound the football. But I think sometimes we overthink the room. He actually has many of the same qualities of Trevor Lawrence. I don't think he's quite as good, but he's 6'6", a lively arm, he's mobile, his teammates love him, he'll let her rip, he throws picks, he doesn't care about it. Like, don't outthink the room. Justin Herbert was always going to be good. You know, there was no red flag here at all. People said, well, he's a little mechanical. I watched the Rose Bowl. He didn't look mechanical to me. He didn't look mechanical yesterday.
Where Colin was wrong.
I went into the season with a lot of skepticism of Pete Carroll. I said he will not let Russell Wilson run this offense, and it's really hurting the team. And in Seattle, they started this thing called Let Russ Cook. Well, guess what? Pete Carroll deserves a ton of credit. They throw the football. Pete Carroll has relinquished the offense to Russell. It is very much driven by Russell Wilson and his decisions. They're now 4-0. And you got to give Pete Carroll credit. Yeah, Joy and I talk about this all the time. Belichick and Pete Carroll are old guys willing to adapt. And I thought Pete was starting to turn into a dinosaur here. Like, stop running the ball for entire first halves. Pete has adapted smartly. This offense is all about Russell Wilson, and Seattle's unbeaten.
Where Colin was right.
Never like Matt Patricia as a head coach for Detroit. The Roger Goodell clown shirt, the hat on backwards first game. I thought he looked like an assistant and a frat boy, and that's exactly what he's been. 10-25. They blew a 17-point lead in week one, an 11-point lead in week two, a 14-point lead yesterday. Every time he's at the mic, he's reeling. Yesterday he's saying, well, I came here and they needed a lot of work. Not really. They were 9-7 and 9-7 under Jim Caldwell. They were good. They just weren't special. And you brought him in to fix up the defense and get special. I don't think the defense is as good, and it's not as good late in games. Situationally, it's a worse defense. Never liked the hire. Proven to be true.
Where Colin was wrong.
I thought OBJ and Kevin Stefanski, I thought there'd be even less OBJ because Stefanski's all about power running. Yesterday, boy, was I wrong. The trick play, the goal line touchdown, the reverse. Stefanski used OBJ brilliantly, cleverly, and it's actually OBJ in this offense now has really become a big play guy, which is what he should be. I thought running game coach, he would be kind of marginalized, but this is when he's at his best. This is when OBJ can be a star, reverses, trick plays, over the top, and OBJ, best game as a Brown.
Where Colin was right.
Don't talk a lot of baseball, but I said the Dodgers appear to have the best team in baseball. They do. They breeze through Milwaukee. Now it's San Diego. By the way, they led the major leagues in home runs and ERA. Cody Bellinger's the reigning MVP. He now bats sixth. They brought in Mookie Betts to a super talented roster and lineup. The Dodgers have all the ingredients to win. They've been everything we thought they would be, and we may not talk baseball, but adding Mookie Betts to an already stacked batting lineup has been just what the doctor ordered, led baseball in home runs and ERA.
Where Colin was wrong.
I thought Tom Herman was a great hire by Texas. They're now 1-3 against TCU. The defense is a mess. You know, it's interesting. I think he's obviously got a personality. He can be a little snippy with the media. But the truth is, they're getting manhandled by TCU. They feel like they're being outcoached. They've recruited offense very well. Defense, not quite as well. He's smart, he's young, but he's got a senior quarterback, an NFL quarterback. They should be rolling over some of these teams. They really should be. They're very fortunate they haven't, that they beat Texas Tech. They have not been as good as they should be. And frankly, in the Big 12, if you're Texas, it shouldn't be 2 and 3 and 4 years to rebuild. I mean, outside of Oklahoma, you should be heavily favored. You're getting better players in recruiting than every other school. There's a lot of Texas Techs in the Big 12. There's Oklahoma, Texas. TCU's a distant third in terms of recruiting. Simply, so far, not good enough. Colin right, Colin wrong. Trent Dilfer's around the corner. NBA, tomorrow night it is. The Miami Heat trailing 2-1 will take on the Lakers, who I think will be a little more energized. Tonight we've got Aaron Rodgers against Matt Ryan. Very interesting. Matt Ryan's always played the Packers well, and the line on this is tricky. It's only 6, 6.5. A lot of people love Green Bay tonight. keep your eye on Atlanta. Atlanta can score. Atlanta's problems are on the defensive side. Atlanta scores a lot of points. So my guess is Aaron Rodgers and Matt Ryan tonight, we're going to have a shootout. I'll take Green Bay, but we're going to have a shootout. In Kansas City and New England, I may be critical of Cam. That game with Cam felt like a big UFC or a big boxing match. Brian Hoyer, Mahomes feels like barely watchable. That is the power of stars and Cam Newton in this league. I'll turn it on tonight. I have a feeling by halftime I'll be exhausted from Brian Hoyer. He's never started a game for the Patriots. Started a lot of games, never for New England. This is his first start tonight. Trent Dilfer is coming up next.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Thursday Night Football returns to Fox. Brady and the all-new Bucks look like the real deal as he meets Super Bowl 52 rival Nick Foles and the Bears on Fox, NFL Network, and streaming on Prime Video.
Bears yesterday. Was it Nick Foles or was it the Colts defense? Colts defense is really... And again, when you get all these draft picks and you're rebuilding a franchise and you hit on about four of them, then you know, the Colts have been very reluctant to spend money in free agency. But they went and got DeForest Buckner. He has been, from the Niners, he's been unbelievable. Free agency should be used infrequently. You know, you sit back. Chris Ballard's been very patient. And then he saw defensive linemen. There's not a lot of interior guys that change the game. Chris Jones is one. They go out and get him. And, man, is he totally delivered for the Colts. They're not an offensive story this year with Phillip Rivers. They are all about defense. Completely shut down Nick Foles, Matt Nagy, and the Bears yesterday. And he played a decade and a half in the NFL, a Super Bowl and a Pro Bowl. Trent Dilfer, my friend, now the football coach at Lipscomb Academy. They won this week, and they've outscored opponents 189-13 over the last month, and he is now joining me, Trent Dilfer. You played in Tampa. I was a reporter in Tampa, and I said it's always been there's been good coaching there. And there's been some good players there, but it's never quite had the leadership. It's always been kind of just a place where talented guys end up. And it feels like Brady can kind of cinch it. He's kind of cinching it all together. That's what it feels like to me. And what say you?
I'd agree with that. I think he's brought back the moral authority of the locker room that was there with John Lynch and Warren Sapp and Derek Brooks and that great defense that won a Super Bowl under John Gruden, has really developed under Tony Dungy. I don't think that's surprising, though. I think everybody knew that Tom would roll in and just change the overall culture of the locker room. I think that there's a subplot, though, to what's going on in Tampa, and that's pretty soon Byron Leftwich is going to be a head coach and Todd Bowles is going to be a head coach again. Tom Brady's a kingmaker, more than just a great player, more than just a guy that elevates the players around him. He makes kings out of coaches. Look what he did in New England. Obviously, Bill Belichick has a lot to do with it, too. But the list is long, from Romeo Crennel to Eric Mangini to Joe Judge to and go on and on and on. Josh McDaniels, Billy O'Brien. Tom Brady made those guys kings. He's about to do the same thing in Tampa. Tom Brady's influence on an organization can't be quantified. He's not just the greatest quarterback of all time, but he's one of the greatest leaders of all time. He gets everybody moving the same direction. He keeps everybody accountable. He holds himself accountable. It's what every locker room, it's what every organization needs.
Yeah, you know, it's the game everybody is talking about this morning. And I'm, you know, you and I have talked about this off air, about adaptability and evolve. You know, some businesses, football, tech, they just change. Media, it just changes constantly. And I think Dallas is an organization. The owner wants to hire coaches that won't challenge him. And the head coach hired a defensive coordinator that won't challenge him. That's what it feels like to me. And I look at this morning, and their defensive players who are expensive are not productive. You're a coach. 3.5 hours, Cleveland got the edge on the running game. I mean, they didn't make an adjustment. Is it players? Is it coaching? What is wrong with Dallas' defense?
It's definitely not organized. They're getting gashed in the run game to give up 300-plus to the Browns. It can't happen in the NFL. A lot of it's how you're organized defensively. It's buy-in. I think when you see defensives playing bad, they're not completely bought in to what they're being taught from a scheme level. NFL players are smart. And a lot of them have been with other schemes. Like, well, wait a second, you're having me wrong arm this, or you're not having me use my hands here, or you're having me drop where, or you're having me read number two when I should be reading number one. Like they're football savants as well at the NFL level. And when you have a coach come in and you start telling them something different and they don't buy in, that's when you see really, really bad defense. And that's what you're seeing with the Cowboys, bad defense. In general, what you're seeing is sizzle, not substance. I get it. Dak's home for 450, first time ever, three games in a row, fireworks offensively. So people are excited about that. But that's not a long-term solution. You got to play all three phases all the time. It's got to be substance-driven, not sizzle-driven. You got to do the little things right all the time to win consistently in the NFL, and that's not happening with the Cowboys right now.
Yeah, some of these videos were showing the holes in which they're running through are obscene. There's just all sorts of space against the Dallas defense. So I'm a fan of Carson Wentz, and I was saying last week, I do think sometimes there's mental fatigue. I think people are dealing with it with COVID. You know, your kids aren't going to school. You're at home with them as a parent. There's a certain fatigue that you just feel. You lose hope. You can't win. Everybody's exhausted. And I feel like with Carson Wentz, Trent, you dealt with some of this in Tampa. You don't have the weapons. You're getting hit multiple times. And I think psychologically, Philadelphia is a tough town to struggle in. It's not your casual, you know, sports town. Like, they're all in. I thought last night's win was bigger than just a W. It looked like December last year. And I'm like, okay, that'll quiet the critics for a couple weeks. What did you make of it was inartistic, to say the least, but what did you make of last night for Wentz?
Well, a couple takeaways. I'd agree with you that the last night's win brought hope, right? It gives you a longer leash. People believe again. 49ers are a very, very good opponent. I know they're down some people, but they're still a very good opponent, and you had to go across the country to play them. So it brings back the hope. I think the other thing going on with Carson Wentz is he misses Frank Reich dearly. And I think a lot of what you've seen in Carson's decline from a production standpoint has been that simpatico relationship with Frank Reich. But what you saw last night was Doug Peterson starting to get back to a lot of the stuff that Frank Reich did. And what Frank Reich is doing as the play caller in Indianapolis, where it's efficiency over explosion. Explosion comes, okay? And it may not come as often when you don't have incredible skill position players, but you can get to explosion. But first, you have to be efficient. And last night, they were more efficient. It looked more balanced. It looked more organized. It looked more on track, on schedule, whatever you want to say. And it's going to lead to efficiency. And you stack up enough efficient games, and explosion will come. And that's really what Frank Reich did when he was in Philly, was he got that efficiency going for them, and you see him do it in Indy as well. So I think they've gone back, they've studied what Carson does best, what works best in the system, and they went back to more of it last night.
You know, I want to ask you, because for years and years, Elite 11, you dealt with all these young quarterbacks. Josh Allen looked erratic. He looks like Big Ben now. I like Justin Herbert more than the critics. I thought big, smart, tall. I thought Oregon's offense was very restrictive for his talents. Let's talk Josh Allen to start, then move to Justin Herbert. Are you surprised by their early success?
I am. I really thought Josh Allen had a really high ceiling. I think, remember coming out, I said super high ceiling, but low floor also, just because the rawness to his game. At Wyoming. Boy, to his credit, has he fixed a lot of stuff. I give his tribe a lot of credit. His tribe there in Buffalo, the coaching staff there, but also his offseason tribe. You know him very well. Jordan Palmer's worked really hard with Josh to really accelerate his learning curve and button up some things that got him in trouble in college. He's a fantastic quarterback, not just athlete. And I think I used to kind of put him in the athlete playing quarterback category. Now he's just a fantastic quarterback. He's got so much horsepower, but he also plays with some discernment on early downs. He can extend plays. He kind of has that ability to know when to hold them, know when to fold them, so to speak. Like, he knows when to give up on a play and when he can't give up on a play. The kid's special, and what's going on in Buffalo is really special as well.
Justin Herbert, let's talk about him. He got 5 minutes to be a starting quarterback against the Chiefs. He's got, to me, a let-it-rip quality. He's got a short memory. He makes a mistake. He gets over it. That's what jumps out to me beyond his arm.
Yeah, I think the physical traits are obvious. We don't need to talk about them. I think what happened with his first start is legendary. To find out 5 minutes before the game, you're starting a game, I can tell you he didn't get very many reps that week. He's handled it with such poise, conviction. The way he's played has been The confidence is just spewing out of him. I did not see him accelerating this fast. I thought, again, like Josh Allen, he was a guy that had a super high ceiling but a low floor. If his confidence got shook early on, I was definitely wrong. He's playing fantastic his rookie year. Now, he is surrounded by some really good coaches, some really good players, so that's helping. But you can just see it. Like he passes the look test. He's got that presence. He's got that poise, the command of his game. Those are not things I expected to see this early in Justin Herbert's career.
So that leads me to my next question. I like Tua. I liked him a lot. I thought he was an A-minus, B-plus prospect. If he comes in for 8 weeks with what we've seen from Burrow and Justin Herbert and Josh Allen, and he looks overwhelmed for 8 weeks, Miami's going to have their top 10 pick and Houston's. How long do you give Tua? And let's be honest about the league right now. It's built for quarterbacks. You can't hit them. You can't touch receivers. It is an offensive league right now. It wasn't when you played. It was much different. So I'm going to be less patient. What if Tua comes in for 8 weeks, struggles? Where do you go with that?
Well, I think there's an argument for both. I don't want to say one's right and one's wrong. To answer your question directly, if he struggles, it's not the end of the world because the Texans draft pick, you get possibly two in the first five picks. However, I do think we just saw the league MVP and the guy that's wowing all of us, Patrick Mahomes, sit for a year, only had 35 pass attempts his rookie year, and watch Alex Smith play. Now, the difference was the Chiefs were winning, so there wasn't the panic button to put Patrick in. But the value in sitting and watching, I tell this to my kids all the time, you don't have to go make mistakes. You can watch other knuckleheads make mistakes and learn from their mistakes.
Right.
Like, so if I'm handling it, again, I don't think there's a right or wrong, but if I were handling it, I would wait. I would wait and let Tua learn, watch from Fitzpatrick's mistakes and also his successes and how he handles his business and the type of pro he is and the type of leader he is, and just take it all in for a year. Let's not forget he came off a catastrophic hip injury too. So I also don't want to throw him to the wolves and he gets physically beat up. So there's a lot of good talking points around this conversation. Again, I'll reiterate, I don't think one's right and one's wrong. I think there is a better versus best. In my opinion, the best situation here is to sit him as long as possible. There is a sweet spot later in the season. I don't think it's these next couple weeks when they go on the road, but you have week 7 versus the Chargers at home. You got a bye week in there. You got the Jets on your schedule. So if you are going to put him out there, it's probably a few weeks from now.
Trent Dilfrey looks happy. He should be. He won 42-0 this weekend. Did you give your assistants the day off today? What did you do for the assistants?
We don't do days off. We don't do days off. They know what they signed up for and they came and coached for me.
You're just grinding them, baby. I love it. Trent Dilfer, good seeing you, buddy. Lipscomb Academy head football coach in Nashville, Tennessee. That's the answer I needed this morning on a Monday. Joy Taylor with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline
That's
News.
That's what I should do. I'm not tough enough. What? Big ratings book, no days off, Joy. It's a Saturday call. Let's go.
What do you mean? No, I don't have days off.
I know you have like 9 jobs.
Well, that and like we have to watch games. That's we don't really have days off to begin with.
You literally now have how many employers do you have now?
Technically only two. 3, I guess, if you count Fox Sports Radio. So yeah. The Lions dropped to 1-3 on the season after losing 35-29 to the Saints on Sunday. I got a lot of love for Detroit.
What, you
I
do?
Well, my grandparents lived in Detroit. They lived in Clinton Township. So I spent a lot of time in Michigan and Detroit growing
All
up.
All right.
And I feel like Detroit is one of those cities that no matter how bad their teams are, we don't ever really go that hard at Detroit. Because right. Everyone's got a little healthy respect for Detroit as a city.
Right.
But the Lions have got to get it together. They are 10-25-1 since Matt Patricia took over as head coach.
Like atrocious. And they're bad on defense.
And he's taking some heat for how he reacted to yesterday's most recent loss.
Obviously, we just lost to the Saints. You know, I mean, let's just give them credit for this game. They played extremely well, and I know we got a lot of work to do. Certainly, I think when I came to Detroit, there was a lot of work to do, and that's what we're trying to do. You know, talking about this year right now, we're talking about right now, you know, these first 4 games, and obviously today wasn't good enough.
The Lions were 9-7 in both of Jim Caldwell's final 2 years as the team's head coach.
The question wasn't whether Caldwell got him to be good. It was like, you, with Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers, you were like, we have to get to another level. And yes. Minnesota had gotten better. It was not that they weren't good.
Now, I'm not saying that Jim Caldwell was the answer there. Well, but to your point.
He was the answer to 9-7.
To 9-7. You want to do better than that.
Right.
But it's not like he was taking over a team that was one or two wins on the season. I mean, it's GM Bob Quinn said that the record wasn't good enough when he fired Caldwell in order to hire Patricia. Okay, so well, I'm wondering how he feels now.
This was just, you know, and I know everybody gives me crap on that backwards hat thing, but he just, to me, the pencil, the hat, the clown shirt, I just didn't buy into it. Like, dress for the job you want, you know? It's like, I just always felt like, he didn't even feel like a coordinator to me. He kind of felt like an assistant. There's nothing wrong with being a six-figure assistant. Maybe you become a great coordinator, but this one just never felt right. It just, Detroit could have done better.
What's worse now, it could get worse than what it is now, too. They have the bye this week, so they have a little bit of a break from the hot seat situation, but then they're at the Jaguars, and then at the Falcons. So, obviously, bye aside, those next two games are going to be pretty crucial probably to decide the future of him and this franchise together. I mean, this was a year you needed to take a step up.
I mean, how long? Sean McVay walked into the Rams. They were a mess. Hour later, they're 3-0. Like, you just...
And the Lions weren't a mess.
I know. I'm not a big... You know, professional football is different. And like in baseball, if you don't have an owner that spends money, you just don't have the arms to compete. Or in the NBA, you know, for years, Memphis, we can't get stars. But in the NFL, if you have somebody as good as Matt Stafford, he is a good, solid B quarterback. You can't be 2-13. He's more talented than Foles or Kirk Cousins. He's not Aaron. Although he's got a great arm, but I'm not going to give you a lot of time, Joy. If Matt Stafford, Matt Ryan are your quarterback, I'm not saying top five, but those are like those guys. When it's all done, these are elite level quarterback talent.
You can't be 10-25-1.
Can't, not with Matt Stafford. Even though he's missed games, you can't be.
No. So the Texans have also had a very disappointing start to the season. They are winless in their first four games, and J.J. Watt did not mince words when he was describing his team's poor start.
We obviously have to do something different. We are 0-4. Whatever we're doing is not working. Something needs to change. Something needs to be different. I mean, this is terrible. It's brutal. It's depressing. I mean, it sucks. It sucks. I don't know any other way to put it. But like I said, I don't know any other way than to work harder.
Well, Deshaun Watson was 20 of 33, threw for 300 yards and two touchdowns. The Texans' defense has yet to force a turnover in 2020, and they're allowing 181.8 rushing yards per game, which is the most in the NFL.
Yeah. Coach wants to be GM. No, didn't even work for Mike Holmgren, who's a Hall of Fame level coach. Coach wants to be GM. Belichick's by the way, Belichick's hole, in my opinion. He's not a great drafter on the offensive side. Like, structurally, you're asking Deshaun Watson to overcome what I believe to be structurally an inefficient organization. It's just, I may criticize Pete Carroll and John Snyder, but they've had a lot of home runs in the fourth, fifth, sixth round of the draft, and they're both very capable. Like, so I may complain occasionally they don't give Russell Wilson more love, but they're capable to a way above capable.
This just feels like a hopeless situation with the Texans. And whether they had won a game this season or not, I would still feel the same way. And it's disappointing, obviously, because Deshaun Watson is an incredible talent. Yeah. And I'd love to see him have the ability to actually make some noise in this league. But, I mean, that's not going to cut it. You can't have no turnovers, and you can't be allowing the most rushing yards in the NFL. Yeah. I mean, that's what's going to happen. It's going to land you at 0-4. And the Dolphins have the Texans' first and second round picks in 2021. So you're not rebuilding this, at least at the high end of the draft, anytime soon as well. So it's looking bleak for the Texans this year. Speaking of the Dolphins, they had high expectations entering this season, but are 1-3 through the first four games. And talk is starting to dial up for Tua to take over for Ryan Fitzpatrick. And Ryan Fitzpatrick told Peter King that he understands at some point he'll be handing the team over to the rookie.
Yep.
I know my job security, really for my whole career, it's a week-to-week proposition, and I've got to go out there and prove it every single week. But with Tua, just being able to slow down sometimes, to be able to take the extra minute to explain something in my thought process, or to sit on the bench during a game and instruct and talk and answer questions, that stuff is maybe a little bit different than, you know, how it would go normally. But I know what my role is, and I know that I'm keeping the seat warm for him.
I really don't know that it's so dramatic in Miami that it's like they're going to be forced by fans or influenced to go to Tua this time.
Yeah.
My thing with Tua, I feel like the clock started for Tua once Herbert got in.
Yeah.
And had that game that he did against the Chiefs.
Right.
Because it's like Herbert went after Tua. I understand he's coming back from a major injury, but from all we've been told, he's ready to play. Like, he's healthy. So you can't handle him, you know, with kid gloves as far as the injury goes forever. Either he's healthy or he's not healthy. So I know more time is obviously more recovery, but at one point or another, you just got to give us an answer on that. I just think the clock started for Tua once Herbert got out there because...
And selfishly, don't we both just want to watch him play? It's so much fun to watch Burrow and Justin Herbert. I just like seeing... I'm over old guy who's struggling. Like, the minute you're struggling, you're old. I'm out. Like,
well, there's just so much good young quarterback talent.
It's incredible.
And you're talking about moving off of Sam Darnold and Daniel Jones. Like, this is a real thing. But you also do need to see what Tua is, yeah, right? Because you do, as I just mentioned, they have the Texans draft picks,
yeah,
for next year. They're not going to win very many games this year, even though, yeah, they were trending in the upward direction towards the end of last season. This is time. You have to see what you have in him. Let him go out there and make mistakes. I'm all for sitting and learning behind a vet, and that's great.
Yeah.
And I do think it's very helpful, but you really only learn how to play football by playing football. Like, at, yeah, one point or another, go out there. And if you have no expectations, like, it's okay if you fail. You kind of, yeah, need to do that. You need to learn what mistakes to make. So I think within the next couple weeks, even though it's not really dramatic as far as the schedule goes, they're at the Niners, at the Broncos, and they have the Chargers. So it's not like... At this point in the season,
yeah,
the way that they've started, it's not like fans are going to be freaking out. I just think it's time to get him out there. And it's going to, within the next few weeks, it's really going to start to be a thing because, yeah, like I said, you're seeing Burrow and Herbert.
Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herdline News.
Daryl Moose Johnson of the Dallas Cowboys is going to be joining us next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Well, for the second time in 4 weeks, Daryl Moose Johnson, Fox Sports, had a Cowboys game. I watched and listened to him for 3.5 hours yesterday, Cowboys-Browns. He is now joining us live from his beautiful house via the Coward Global Satellite Network. So let's just start with one that's fairly obvious. I understand late in the game when you trail, but why isn't Zeke getting more carries in your opinion?
I have no idea. It was one of the things we touched on a little bit yesterday. Yep. Maybe not enough, but I think the way that Cleveland plays, you know, with Kevin Stefanski being one of the three offenses last season that ran it more than they threw it, it's just part of what he believes in as a philosophy. And I'm not sure that's the same with Kellen Moore. You know, Mike McCarthy has really allowed Kellen to really control the offense to keep that consistency for Dak Prescott to be able to take that next step. So I'm not really sure. I'm not sure why Zeke is not a bigger part. To your point, you know, they've fallen behind. They haven't really played with a lead a whole lot this season. But still, I think if they were to get Zeke more involved, maybe you're not trailing as much.
You had a great coach in Jimmy Johnson. What would concern you about Mike McCarthy right now? Is there something glaring in your opinion, Moose?
No, not at all. I thought he had a very good point yesterday. I was driving back to the house after the game, and he said, you know, a lot of times when you get into a rut like this, it's something new every week. And, you know, that's hard to put your finger on. You know, it's a moving issue. He goes, what concerns me right now is I'm starting to see a pattern. And I would agree with that. You know, it's kind of been the same story, you know, week after week for Dallas. It's the turnovers. They're not playing good complementary football. They're putting a defense that really doesn't know exactly. They haven't meshed yet. And they're putting that defense into tough situations during the course of the game. And they're just not ready to go out in a sudden change and shut somebody down and force a field goal attempt or force a punt. So they're still struggling to find their identity. So for a while, this offense has to carry this team air-free. You know, not 500 yards with two turnovers, but, you know, how about 350 yards with zero turnovers? And start playing a little bit better complementary football.
What about this criticism that many of the highest paid Cowboys, Daryl, are not productive? DeMarcus Lawrence, Jalen Smith. You know, I've always said in the NFL with a salary cap, you know, pay big money rarely, but there are people that are simply beyond quarterbacks, that are simply too productive. George Kittle last night, he's just productive. There is no duplicate on the market for George Kittle. But if I said to you this, a lot of the big pay days for the Dallas, they're not productive enough. Is that a system thing, or they were simply overpaid?
I'm not sure, but I will agree with you that, you know, yesterday, one of the more disturbing things for me on the defensive side of the ball was a lack of physicality, a lack of toughness, maybe a little bit of hesitancy from time to time. And there were some comments in the papers today. You know, DeMarcus Lawrence came out and said that we didn't play with a physical presence. You know, he's one of the leaders on that team. And to your point, he has not been productive, and he hasn't been productive in a while. You know, a lot of people can say, hey, he's getting comfortable in Mike Nolan's defense, and he's working between the 2-point stance and the 3-point stance. But this goes back to last year. You know, he was not very productive the latter part of last season as well. So I know he's battling a little bit of a knee injury this year, so maybe he's not 100%. Jalen Smith, not sure what's going on there. You know, with Leighton Vander Esch out, maybe it's just not a great mesh right now with Joe Thomas, but they've played side by side before in the past. Again, it's one of those things where when you watch this defense play, the one thing that jumped out to me yesterday, and when you give up 307 yards on the ground, you are not playing smart, tough, physical football. And that's the one thing that's really hard to correct. You can fix assignments in X's and O's, but that's a tougher one, you know, to have to kind of redirect and get a handle on.
How long can you struggle before people abandon on the system or the coach? You were on very few poor teams, but is it a week six, a week seven, and then guys just don't listen to the message? They're hollow words. They don't buy into what the coach is saying.
Yeah, you got to be very careful. It's a real slippery slope when you're not having production in a system. You know, number one, you got to look at yourself first. You know, what can I do to be better? You have to exhaust that situation. And then if it continues to happen, then you have to have some really hard conversations, you know, with your players, with your coaches. And that was one of the things that I think Dallas needs to do this week. I really would sit down as an entire football family, coaches, players, you know, not offense, defense, special teams, but sit down all together and watch that tape. And be held accountable by your peers and your teammates and your friends in that team meeting room, in that environment, and understand, you know, what's at stake right now. So, you know, they've got a lot to work on, and it'll be interesting to see. The odd thing about that game, Colin, was it 14-7 Dallas? We thought Cleveland was on the cusp of getting run out of that building.
Yeah.
And then they made the two big takeaways, and they jumped out 21-14, and then that was it.
Yeah.
But that shows you that, you know, in a situation like that, if you're making the plays, you can turn the tide and the momentum of that game. Cleveland was able to do it, and I've yet to see Dallas really have those types of plays in a game where they can kind of, you know, take it, turn it around, and then just run away with it.
What'd you make of Odell Beckham's performance, just the way they used him?
Yeah, you know, that was one of the more interesting things coming into the game. You know, he hasn't expressed frustration yet, but when all you're doing is talking about, you know, running the football and this is going to be our identity moving forward, you know, he walked the line. He said, you know what, I'd love to be on an offense where we had the leading rusher in the NFL. We're going to be working on the outside. You know, Jarvis Landry and I, you know, we'll become great blockers. Our time will come. But I thought it was great the way they got him involved. The gadget play in the beginning of the game, the reverse to close out the game. You know, it keeps him involved. And if you are going to be a predominantly, you know, running team and you're going to build it around that style of play to keep somebody like Odell Beckham Jr. involved, you're going to have some creative things in that offensive package. And I thought that Alex Van Pelt and Kevin Stefanski did a great job with some of the special plays they had in place for him. And he gets three touchdowns. You know, he had one touchdown coming into the game.
Yeah.
So that's really going to be a huge plus for them moving forward to have him involved in every game.
Three Super Bowl rings, multiple-time Pro Bowler, Fox Sports NFL analyst Daryl Moose Johnson. Good stuff on the Cowboys. Covered him two of the last 4 weeks. Moose, appreciate you coming on our show today from Texas.
Always a pleasure. Good catching up with you, Colin.
You bet. Walmart, only available there. Michelin XT silicone wiper blades. Real world proven, only at Walmart, lasts two times longer than other blades. Tony Gonzalez joining us last hour, among other things. So we got, I thought yesterday was kind of a choppy day. There's two or three things that jumped out to me. Buffalo looks like a team capable of getting to a conference championship. My theory has always been in the NFL, if you're good enough to get to the conference championship, you're good enough to win the Super Bowl. You know, you're good enough to get to the Final Four, you're good enough to win it. You're good enough to get to the NBA Finals. Unless you're facing a dynasty, you're good enough to win it. Buffalo is good enough to me. With Josh Allen, that staff, and that defense, Buffalo is good enough. First time in 20, 25 years. They're good enough to get to a conference championship. So is Baltimore, by the way. Let's not sell the stock. So is Kansas City. With Cam, New England looks like they could get there. So that was one of the things that jumped out to me. Buffalo's the real deal. And it's hard. You go on the road. You got a young quarterback. You're playing real well. It's really easy to nosedive, get ahead of yourself, get into your feels, feel great about yourself. I thought Buffalo played really well the entire game. That jumped out to me. It also jumps out to me that Baltimore goes and plays Washington. Isn't great. Lamar's kind of finding his way right now. Still, forget that last touchdown by Washington. Baltimore rolls them out. So Baltimore, Kansas City exposed. They're not quite right offensively, but when you drop that many points against Washington, which has one of the better defensive fronts, you're okay. So Baltimore, Kansas City, Buffalo to me. And when Cam plays, that feels like the top four in the AFC this morning to me, and kind of by a lot, NFC still up for grabs. RecTech, more than a grill, it's a lifestyle. RecTech with a Q.com, RECTEQ, built by grillers for grillers with smart grill technology. Hour 3 on a Monday next.